Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to Talking with People, a QF production. I'm your host, Adam Pallant. Now, on today's episode, we continue our NFL team-by-team past season recap and this season's previews with a look into the New York Football Club, the Giants. I know we all miss Ryan's biased picks and predictions for his team, as this was his show, but I promise I will do my best to find some hidden positives while being brutally honest about what could be the third best NFL team that calls New York home. So with that said, I am honored to have as my guest a man who I've worked with since 2005 and have admired his ability to sell ketchup to a woman with white gloves, they say. His demeanor in difficult situations and his ability to find humor day in and day out is what makes him a quality salesperson and a quality human. Here he is, my E&R co-worker and friend, Matt McLiberty. Matt, how are you?
Adam, thank you for having me.
Go ahead.
You know, I just finished up my workday and I cracked open a nice cold Pride of New Jersey, Cane Overhead IPA.
Nice.
And best beer I have ever drank.
Wow. It's like a reward. It's like a reward for you.
It's fantastic. It's delicious. Even my friends who don't like IPAs, I give them this and they like it. They're not disgusted.
Did they pay you to mention that on the show?
Not yet. But I'm thinking, you know, if they hear this, that might be a sponsor for you.
There you go.
Adam Keynes. And I'll tell you, when it comes to the alcohol content, let me just say this. They don't waste your time. You know, that's the way I put it. I'm not going to get into the numbers of it, but it's, it doesn't waste your time.
Well, I can assume as a Giants fan, you probably need as much alcohol as you can get before, into, and even after the season.
I have a new thing now as I've gotten older and wiser. I'm sometimes like a start drinking at halftime kind of guy. Also it depends if it's a 1 o'clock game or a 4 o'clock game.
Right.
You know,
if it's an 8 o'clock game, you're not drinking the halftime.
Yeah, I'm already well underway by that time. And even a 4 o'clock, I probably start right at kickoff. Right at first kickoff.
Okay. With me, I start drinking at halftime of the 1 o'clock games if the Steelers are playing at 4 o'clock, just so I can be mentally prepared.
Mm-hmm.
That's always my plan.
Sure.
All right, what we're going to do today, we're going to talk Giants. So if you're ready, let's sit back. As I mentioned before, let's get our copy of the E&R so we can reference the top Northwest Specialty Contractors rankings if needed. And let's get into it. You ready?
Sure.
All right, we're going to jump right in. Before we do anything, I'm going to test your trivia knowledge, and it's a multiple choice one, so I have faith in your ability. All right, because multiple choice are rare. What New York Giants defensive back went on to have a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach? Now, do you need the options?
Let me think about that for a second.
Right. What New York Giants defensive back went on to have a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach?
A Hall of Fame career as a coach.
Exactly.
I don't know if I get multiple guesses, but
I have a multiple choice. I have four options for you if you want them.
Let me try without the options.
All right,
let me try like the bonus lightning round. I'm wondering, Tom Coughlin?
Tom Coughlin is incorrect.
Okay. All right. Dude, throw me the choices then.
Okay. So Don Shula, John Madden, Tom Landry, Vince Lombardi. New York Giants defensive back went on to have a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach.
I'm actually going to go with Tom Landry.
Tom Landry is correct.
All right.
There you go. He played defensive back for the Giants before going on to have a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach. He served as an assistant coach for the Giants in 56 to 59. And then 1960, he became head coach of the newly founded Dallas Cowboys, a position he held until 1989. So pretty good. That's a hell of a way to kick off the podcast.
Thank you. I mean, I thought it was easy that it wasn't John Madden. I thought that was sort of, I ruled him out right away. But one thing that would be interesting, and I'm sure this has been done somewhere, is if you built a Giants tree of, all the people who have been like coaches or who have come through the organization, that I think would be pretty interesting. And maybe someone has already done it. Maybe it's out there on the interwebs, as they like to say. Because I know I saw that once, even with West Point, and that was fascinating. They showed everyone who had come through, West Point as a coach, and it was mind-boggling.
That's amazing. That what would I'm assuming that Jason Garrett would be the greatest of all the Giants participants on that team.
Yeah, Jason Garrett on Army.
Yes. He went to Princeton, but I was talking about the Giants.
Okay.
There you go. All right. It was a rare shot at Giants coaching tree humor. But at West Point, yeah. I'm wondering if Benedict Arnold would be that, because he was, from my understanding, if I know my history well, he was an outstanding safety on the West Point football team. So, it could have been.
He was an incredible, it's a huge tangent we could go down with Benedict Arnold, but they said he was so good. He was so good. It's too bad he used his talent for evil and not good. Because they said he was the most brilliant of generals. And as a guy who is legitimately obsessed with the Battle of Saratoga, he was a key player in the Battle of Saratoga. Mm-hmm. If he's not at the Battle of Saratoga, it doesn't play out that way. And that has been called the turning point of the war. We might not have America if it wasn't for the Battle of Saratoga, but he just couldn't hang in there and be a team player.
No.
And, then also as Americans, we're always raised, the poor story of Nathan Hale, being hung as a spy. But, unlike Arnold, they said Nathan Hale was actually a terrible spy. He was like the worst spy ever. He had no experience. He had no cover story. So, because if you get caught like looking at stuff, you got to have a cover story. You can't just be like, oh, I'm on a picnic, it didn't fly. So
that is incredible. I was thinking that he would say he was on Gilligan's Island, but of course that was Alan Hale. So I digress, and we will move on from the Battle of Saratoga, which is an outstanding conversation topic and one that maybe a future episode we can cover, but we're going to stay with the Giants here. And I appreciate your the broadness of your knowledge here.
Oh, sure. I figure, there's enough football pundits out there who do the same thing over and over again. I'm going to try and give you something different. Something a little more philosophical.
It's why I invited you on the show, because I knew you would help me stretch the boundaries and move the needle in a different direction that everyone expected this whole episode to go.
And I'm sure you have an agenda or a plan or a structure or something, but if we want to jump right into the roster, the new Giants roster and that sort of thing. And I can tell you this, that this time every year when the Giants, everyone's so optimistic at this time of year, but normally with the Giants, when they would brag about their new offensive weapons that they had acquired for the season, I never got excited about that, because I always thought offensive weapons for the Giants, they remind me of like the Glengarry leads. You know, like the Giants don't know what to do with them. It would be a waste.
They're crap. It would
be a waste to give them, you know, Kadarius Toney or whoever, because, you know, they just wouldn't know what to do with them. So this year, I'm actually more excited because I think what they're bragging about this time, what they're excited about, there's a lot of defensive players. Mm-hmm. And I'm liking that idea better than because as a Giants fan, I've gone through it every year where they get some great new offensive weapon. And then the guy like sits on the bench or he runs down and outs or button hooks or something when he's like, you know, one of the fastest guys in the world, you know? So I'm liking some of this stuff on defense.
Okay.
And the guy I'm really liking to cut to the chase instead of going like player by player, I'm really liking that Jordan Riley. I think his name, but I say, mark my words, that guy's a monster. He's a beast.
That's the seventh round pick they had at Oregon.
I think so. I'm not the detail guy with all the background and stuff like that, but I've seen him and he looks amazing. And it's great because, you know, the one year they got Ojulari, who I think is great, but then they got Thibodeau and he's obviously amazing, but I did scratch my head a little bit because I was kind of like, those are two of the same guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the speedsters at the end. And they have Dexter Lawrence in the interior, who's amazing. I love him. But I really wanted like another beast because they got two speedsters and I wanted another beast. So I think this guy Riley is the beast. He's the other beast. So like I said, everyone at the start of the year is so excited. They think things are going to be great. And you know what I always come back to is there was an ad on for years for the Yankees for like the Yes Network or something. And they were talking about like when they got Stanton and the ad, they ran it like ad infinitum. And they were like, this is the new murderer's row. And it's Judge, it's Stanton, it's this, you know, and it was like that never. I think that never really came to fruition. So I don't want to sound like that, but I think when you have Lawrence and this guy Riley, this kid Riley in the middle, and then you got Thibodeau and Ojulari on the ends, that looks like an incredible.
You're excited. You're excited about that. Yeah. Court.
And I know everyone always brings out Leonard Williams. They bring up Leonard Williams and, you know, the funny thing is, and, you know, not that I'm trying to stir up controversy or whatever, because you never have to, as the great Charles Barkley said, you could say the sky is blue and someone online is going to argue with you and say you're an idiot, that sort of thing. So I'm not the biggest fan of Leonard Williams. And I'll tell you exactly why. I think he's a bit of a dancer. He's got great eyes. Like, you know, there's a guy blocking him, his eyes are great. He's looking where that ball is. And so many times the great plays he makes are, he jumps out off his block and tackles that runner. So he's great at that. He's got great eyes, but he's a bit of a dancer. I like Dexter Lawrence, who Dexter don't dance. Dexter goes right through you. Dexter pushes you right into the backfield. And that's what it looks like Riley does too.
So you're excited about the defense. So we might as well just look at the fact that the draft that the Giants had, they went heavy defense. I mean, first round, they got Deontay Banks at cornerback out of Maryland. And knowing Wink Martindale's defense needs, he likes a cornerback who can line up in the press and be reactive in coverage. So this guy definitely fills the bill. So I think you got a quality first pick if you're looking for defense.
And you know, you got to love Wink Martindale, because any guy that would agree to be called Wink, you know, he's cool. You know, he has a sense of humor. You know, he's, you know, because you got to be. I mean, I just, whenever I hear his name, though, I just wish there was like maybe another guy named like Bob Eubanks and you know, someone else like that.
Sure.
But I'm loving Wink Martindale. I'm loving Dable. You know, I know this may be free form. We may just be jumping around, but you know, hey, that's talking with people. I have been the biggest detractor for years of the Giants coaching and chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like Dable is, he's the, in my lifetime, he's my favorite coach since Parcells.
Wow. Wow. Even more than Coughlin.
Coughlin was really smart and prudent. And I felt he was too conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the two Super Bowls that they won, I'm not going to throw luck into it, but things aligned. A lot of things aligned for mm-hmm. them to win those two Super Bowls. And but Coughlin, smart, sharp, prudent, never did anything stupid. You know, it was amazing to me sometimes when you watch a game and like they screw up the time clock management or the, you know, something like that. You're like, wow, Coughlin would never do something like that. But I like that Dable will take a risk, take a chance, go for it on fourth. And, you know, Coughlin was too conservative.
Okay.
But they had some terrible coaches for a few years there. And I always hated the Giants management. I always thought the Giants were the football version of like a big, stupid American company from the 70s or whatever, you know, like the horror years of GM or the terrible years of IBM, where they were just so sort of conservative, would never do anything new. They were just like a big, stupid company, you know? And that's what I hated about them. They seem like they have some different people now who are a little more, you know, that sort of thing. And then, and you know, it's funny, I was at some sort of football party once, and I was throwing that theory out there that they're like General Motors in the 70s or the 80s or something like that. And I remember at one point I said, you know, for example, like I would never picture like the Giants like having a black quarterback. And someone said, like, oh, what do you think? You're like that? What do you think? They're racist or something? And I said, no, they're just against anything they've never seen before or had before. You know, they wouldn't have a guy with like a shaved head either, you know, or a guy who dyed his hair blonde or something, you know. They would just be like, that's weird. We don't, you know, I've never seen a quarterback with bleach blonde hair, you know, like they, you know, so they were like that for years. They were like, so, like I said, like a stupid old company.
And that's why you don't get invited to many of the football parties anymore, Matt, right?
Well, it's funny. There was a guy, I knew a guy years ago who he belonged to like the Touchdown Club. I think, I don't know if it even still exists, but so we would go to these lunches. They were classic. They would have a bunch of the Giants there and they would have great food and beers. And it was such an old school kind of, it was almost like a football version of the three martini lunch, you know, like it was such an old school thing. And you'd be there for hours drinking beers and like, no one's going back to work. It was like, no one does that anymore.
No,
you know?
No,
and they should.
Well, I mean, without giving too much away, I've had the three martini lunch and still worked. And I've had three martini lunch while I worked. But yes, they don't do those classic, cliche, you know, Mad Men type of moments anymore.
That's right. So, but I'm liking the Giants lately. Like I said, I think the coaching and the management seems a lot, I'm, you know, probably younger, less conservative, willing to take a chance, willing, you know, and sometimes too, I think management and coaching, they always need to realize that the players are changing. They're different generations of players. Like I'm always telling my son who's just started playing tackle football. I said, you got to realize that there's a lot of coaches that they expect you to have a certain personality as a football player. And so, like I told my son, I said, you don't have it. So I said, so here's what you got to do. I said, a lot of people, they will tell you, well, you know, change, be animated, be rah, rah, rah. And I said, don't try to be something you're not. That'll never work. So I said, just try to be like twice as good. Because he has natural, my son has natural ability. So I was like, you're going to have to be a lot better because you're a laid back, low key, quiet kid. So I said, he listened to me. And like we went to practice the other night and he's, you know, was just blowing everything up. But you know, that's my personal, well, just being proud.
Knowing you, knowing the person you have been over the years, I can definitely say that natural talent probably comes from your side of the family. I can just tell that ability. So you know, you're enthusiastic about the coaching and you're enthusiastic about his team. So we're going to skip a couple of the other things that I had in my quote unquote agenda. We're going to go right into the prediction of the season because I can tell that you are so stoked about it. That you are ready to give me your picks. So if you're ready, I'm ready.
Do you want to go game by game? And because it's totally up to you. I mean, at this point, I don't think I would be making such an educated guess. I'll throw a big one out there. I'm thinking 11-6. They, you know, make the playoffs. And you know what's funny? There was a famous scene quote from Mike Francesa where he was bashing making the playoffs. And he was kind of like, you want the Super Bowl, man. You don't want to just like, you know, make the playoffs. And I'm kind of like, no, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I want to make the playoffs. You know, bottom line is, I want as many games that matter as possible because there's nothing more depressing to a football fan when there's games left and they don't even matter. That's the worst thing imaginable. So you want as many games that matter as possible. And even like last year, I believe, like, you know, they made the playoffs. They won the first game that they were in, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they were 2-0 for the first time since 2016. They were off to their best start since 2008. And then they surpassed their win total of 2021 by week 6 when they beat the Ravens. And then with a win over the Commanders in week 15, they guaranteed their first non-losing season since 2016 and the first season since 2009 in which they never had a losing record at any stage of the year. So that must have been a lot of fun for you.
I mean, that's really all I'm looking for. Like I said, that famous scene that they used to play on ads for whatever station, you know, Francesa, you know, come on, man, you know, you got to win the big one. You know, I'm like, no, let's slow down. You know, as many games that matter, that's what I love. And if we'll jump around a little bit, with the offense, I would give an award to Daniel Jones and this is the history of the NFL. I would give him an award as most improved quarterback I've ever seen.
not Geno Smith last year. He did something miraculous. He went from a has-been to pretty much an MVP candidate.
Well, you know, it's funny. They're two different stories. Like Jones looked awful to me. And the first maybe like 2 years, there were a lot of losses that I would put 100% on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
It wasn't like the team lost. He lost. Mm-hmm. He blew the game. He lost the game. And And he had a bunch of terrible behaviors. So now one of the things that, you know I wonder about anytime I see someone playing football, they exhibit these bad traits. The question that goes through my mind is, are they going to be able to fix that? Mm-hmm. So when you see a guy like staring down receivers, fumbling the ball gets stripped, bad decisions, stuff like that, I wonder, like, is he going to be able to fix that? You know, and so so I think he has fixed that. Now, a guy I know the other day, I was just saying this, and he said, well, you got to realize he had those different coaches. He had different this, he had different that. And I didn't really buy into that because I thought, you know, did you need to be told not to stare down receivers? Do you need to be told where to hold it, that you were holding it in the, like, please knock it out position? So it's like, did you need to be told that stuff? I mean, you played, I'm sure you played Little League in high school and 4 years at Duke, and you needed to be told that. Like, some guys don't need to be told these things, you know? So, but I didn't have high hopes for him, but they did fix between him or his coaching or whatever, they did fix a lot of his problems, and he looked so much better last year. Geno Smith, to me, is a different story, I think, because in my mind, I thought he was the worst quarterback I had seen in a long time. And I didn't know why he was in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I didn't know why he was in a uniform with a helmet on. I just thought he was so awful. Words couldn't describe it. And I was just kind of like, what are they watching? Are they watching like him through some sort of kaleidoscope or something that, you know? So I thought he was like one of the worst quarterbacks I had ever seen. And when I watched him last year, I just thought something must have happened. Like, maybe he got hit on the head or something, and like it rearranged his brain or something. Like, he's so different from Jones. Like, Jones was almost like it was the coaching. Like, it was the coaching. And they fixed his problems. Geno just looked like a completely different player to me.
Like when Mama Cass supposedly got hit in the head because she was off tune and they threw something at her and hit her in the head, and all of a sudden she was able to hit the note they wanted to, and she joined the Mamas and Papas, and the rest was music history.
I didn't know that. I love that trivia.
Yeah, that's whether it's whether it really happened or whether it didn't. That's what I've heard, that the lead singer and just hit her in the head with something, a lamp or something, and it changed her whole singing ability or whatever note she wasn't able to hit, and she did. And the rest, I said, all Lisa Brown, Mama Cass. This is before, of course, she choked on a ham sandwich.
Exactly, and very, very sad. And I don't know if you've ever watched any of those shows, Behind the Music or whatever it was, and the daughter was like, all everyone remembers is the ham sandwich. you know, like, because she was saying, like, I think she actually technically died of something else, but it was like the medical examiner, coroner, whoever, the cops showed up, and they sort of like, you do an inventory of the scene,
right?
So like, it could have been like, you know, needles, heroin, bottle of alcohol, but they wrote ham sandwich. And then since she was heavy, people were like,
ironically, had she just kept kosher, that wouldn't have happened.
True. And you know, along those lines, I heard a similar story about Frank Zappa, that like something happened to him. Like, he got hit, and then his voice went low, and so he couldn't hit the high notes anymore. But yeah. So like I said, Jones was like a case study in the right coaching, and they fixed him and his coaches fixed his problems. Geno, I just think, took a blow to the head, and he's just a completely different guy now. But he got struck by lightning or something, you know.
I mean, and very much like Daniel Jones, reviving his career or improving. I mean, you got to give it to the offensive line. You know, they did an amazing job keeping him upright and available to throw the ball, and of course hand it to Saquon. But you know, where was he and where was the improvement when they went 3-6-1 in their last 10 and almost missing the playoffs?
It was like last year was the improvement. Like, you know, it took him a while. Yep. And like I said, I always ask myself, when you see a guy making these mistakes, you're like, you know, you didn't just start playing yesterday. You know, it's like, you know, these are obvious things like the staring down of the receiver. Granted, he wasn't, and I'll bring up a very painful name from the past for Giants fans that they'll cringe. Dave Brown.
Yeah.
Dave Brown was, he was the staring champ. Mm-hmm. I mean, the defense would even say that after a loss, they'd interview the defense and they were like, well, you know, he was staring at the guy. He was pointing at him. He was saying, hey, Joe, I'm throwing it to you, you know? And, you know, so they were like, I'd be a sucker if I didn't pick that off, you know, like, you know, the defense was like, maybe he thought I was his receiver. I don't know. But yeah. So like I said, Daniel Jones, incredibly improved. I'll throw this out there. Did they, and I know this has been discussed to death, but did they overpay for him? Sure. Yes, they did. They absolutely overpaid.
They had to. I mean, were they going to start all over again with another quarterback? I don't like, you can't keep doing that. The Jets are a perfect example. Every year they're starting something new up until the Aaron Rodgers years, but coming up, but you can't just keep starting over and over again with a new coach, new quarterback, new coach. It doesn't work.
Agreed. You need the continuity. Yeah. Look at any team that's like a revolving door with the people. Are they ever good? They're never good. So, but here's the story for you is when Jones got all that money and Barkley was up in the air, I said to my wife, I said, you know what Daniel Jones should do? He should give back some of that money and say, hey, do you not have enough money to sign these other guys and surround me with better guys? Take back some of my money. Mm. And so my wife laughed. She said, that's so ridiculous that you think that any human being could do that. But then Rodgers did it.
Right.
You know?
Incredible. I mean, Brady was well known to do that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and because it's because they see the number, they get the number, and they feel the love. Mm-hmm. And so they don't feel dissed, and they're like, all right, they love me. They gave me that, you know, $35 million a year, whatever. Okay, I feel loved now. Now I want some better players around me. Take some of this money and surround me with, you know, some better players.
You know, I did the same thing, and when I had to keep Jim's story on with the ENR, but unfortunately, it wasn't enough to keep him. But along the same mentality, that's how I roll. Yeah.
But yeah, so with Daniel Jones. Most improved quarterback ever. Geno is just like, wow, that's just like a different guy. He got hit by lightning or a truck or something like that.
Let me ask you something. I know you mentioned in past conversations Belichick. If Belichick is coaching the Giants this past year, do they beat the Eagles in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I think the Eagles were just too much. Their quarterback is just too strong, too powerful. Their defensive line looked ridiculous. And didn't they have a they had a Ndamukong Suh on there, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, where did he come from? How did they get him?
He finished stepping on people's heads just enough time to sign a contract with the Eagles.
I hated that incident with him, mm-hmm. where he stepped on the guy's arm. I was just kind of like, how do you not, you know, throw the book at this guy? But I just saw this story on him of where he's involved in construction and real estate. His dad was like an HVAC guy.
Nice.
He taught him construction. And so he's a big like real estate developer.
Look at that. So,
really
so
smart guy.
You don't want to mess with them. And if you do, you better wear a construction hat. Otherwise, he'll be stepping on your head.
I assume, you know, everyone pays the rent. I assume if that guy's the landlord, you know, you're paying the rent. But
you don't want him knocking on your door.
But yeah, so Jones, you know, and it's funny if we want to talk about Barkley for a second. And I love Barkley. What I hate is sometimes football pundits and announcers that will bash him when his numbers are down, because there's so many situations where, you know, they give him the ball and like the defense knows he's getting the ball. Mm-hmm. There's no hole. There's no space for him to maneuver. And he gets like stopped, you know, at the line or something like that. And the pundits will be like, oh, his production's down. What's wrong with Barkley? What's wrong with Barkley? Nothing's wrong with Barkley. How about you give him some plays mm-hmm. where he's out in space, you know, like throwing the ball out of the backfield, or like if everyone, you know, can remember the Coughlin years and the years with like Bradshaw, Jacobs, Chris Snee, you know, and I was giving my son a speech about this, of the importance of the O-line and who gets the glory and who's important, but people don't remember them. When people talk about the Giants and even like the two big Super Bowls over the Patriots, the last person they're ever going to mention is like Rich Soibert, you know, the guard, you know, but like, that's one of the reasons they were so good, is because you had these guys like Soibert and Snee, and they used to pull Snee and they would take off and they would open up these giant gaps for Bradshaw and Jacobs. And like, you'll see with Barkley, lots of times there's no room for him to mm-hmm. operate, you know? So that's one of those things. And this could be a whole category for your future podcast of things that football guys say that I hate. And so I hate when they're like, Barkley, his numbers are down. And it was like, it's not him, you know.
Well, is it more the issue that the Giants didn't have quality receivers, so they needed to keep Jones up long enough to find somebody, and then knowing that Barkley was such a talent, he'll find the holes. If there are any, he'll find them. But we got to give Jones some time to actually throw the ball, because his receivers are average at best.
And I know I was saying how I have no faith in offensive weapons that the Giants get, but I think that area is different this year too, because that the tight end is it Weller?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's his name. Like I said, I'm not a details guy with all the names and their history and stuff. I'm not Mike Francesa by any means.
And you're lucky.
But Weller, that guy looked fantastic to me just in the preseason. And let me just be maybe the first guy to go on the record and say this, is watch any time they interview him and tell me that you don't think of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Watch an interview with that guy. He talks like him. He smiles like him. His ears are like him.
Okay.
He's got the charisma. Like I'm telling you, that's like, I don't want to say that that's Obama's like long lost love child.
Right.
You know, because I'm sure it isn't, but they could just call him the president.
Well, if you're going to emulate anybody, emulating Barack Obama in any way, shape or form is a good way to go.
Just mark my words, take that down. I want to be the first one to go on the record as saying, he's Obama. He's Obama Jr.
Right.
Weller.
And, well, hopefully he can be a leader on the field like Obama was.
Yes. And then they got the other guy who I'm forgetting his name, was the speedster.
In the draft?
Yeah.
They got the wide receiver, they got Jalin Hyatt.
Yes.
Out of Tennessee, yeah.
He looks like a complete speedster. Deep Threat, you know, which that's something that the Giants, I don't know, I can't remember them ever having a threat of a guy who's going to burn people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was always like they were always working underneath, and even like Beckham, and I'll give him an award for, and he is in the history of the NFL, I'll give him the award as best cuts ever. That like you know, I gave my award Daniel Jones most improved quarterback. Right. Beckham, best cuts ever. His cuts were unbelievable, how sharp they were. Like, it was like, and that made him like uncoverable in certain routes. So but the Giants never seem to have that speedster that scares people.
Yeah.
So this new guy.
That could be the big difference this year. That actually, they got some wide receivers teaming up with Barkley in the backfield, and I think they got another running back in the draft that may make some noise. It was I think it was their fifth round pick, Eric Gray at Oklahoma. I mean, he's a depth chart guy, but you know, one of the most underrated backs in the class. So that could be something interesting, something to give Barkley a little bit of rest. You know, if they're winning, or the rare times are going to be winning this year, in my opinion. So that'll be something to look for.
And you need like three great backs. You know, you can, like you say, you know, the way they get injured, you know, you got to give them a breather, that sort of thing. So you need two, three backs. And like the pundits say, and they're not wrong, like, you can find them if you're a good shopper. And that's why, like, I think they described, even when they were hemming and hawing about paying Barkley, and the pundits were saying, well, the market for running backs is kind of flat. It's not that hot. And that's the law of supply and demand, that there's a lot of them. And, but the backs look great. I've sort of always been happy with the Giants' backs. Always been happy there. It's funny with the O-line. You know, I remember the pundits hated Thomas when mm-hmm. they picked him, and he has turned out to be very good. You know, Neal on the other side, you know, it's funny. I think out of any position in football, the hardest one to evaluate is O-line.
Mm-hmm.
You just sometimes you don't know who's going to be good. They were good in college because the guys were like so big, whatever. But there's so many washouts, and the Giants have had plenty of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years of, you know, I guess, you know, it's easier to evaluate a quarterback and a receiver and a back and stuff like that. O-line is the hardest thing, you know. And God, the Giants have looked pretty bad at O-line for several years, no matter who they've been heading.
No, you're absolutely right. So it'll be interesting to see how they all the improvements from the free agent acquisitions and the draft, if it makes much of a difference on the O-line. So you threw out 11-6. It's not too shabby. I won't even go into the fact that I have them with many, many less wins than that. I'm giving them a 5-12 record because I just don't have a lot of faith, and mostly because the strength of schedule. When you know, make the playoffs, you're going to be facing some tough ones. We will not go game to game because we don't have to. And for the fans of the podcast, I did hear from Ryan, former host and creator of this podcast. He predicts 10 wins, so he's right up there with him, with expecting a better win total than last year. But I don't. Of course, I'm always wrong, but and I don't think so in this case.
I have, being a fan, I have to be a little optimistic, but you know, I'm a big fan of the philosophical questions of football, because like I said, there's so many people on TV who just talk incessantly about every little detail, you know, about football, and so I'm kind of like, that's been done. We don't need more guys to do that. So when I was talking about the difficulty of evaluating offensive linemen, it brings up a question that I love to pose just to anyone who cares, is the world of football terrible at evaluating talent, or is it just really hard?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, and more so the second, because when you're evaluating somebody, and you said it earlier about the the big guys playing, you know, every roster of a college only has about four, maybe five guys who are NFL worthy. So now you got the best of the best of the best playing against each other. And then if you're evaluating a guy, well, is it him that was great, or was it his teammate that made him better? Or was it, were they just playing the bad conference, or what was it that made that guy great? Whether it's offense or defense, there's so many unseen and invisible considerations that you can't say this guy's going to be the best. I mean, look how many great quarterbacks in college died off. The Ryan Leafs of the world, or the Tim Couches of the world, that just disappeared. And the others who, you know, the Tom Brady's who were drafted late, or who was a backup. Nobody can expect that. And not even the best predictors or drafters or scouts can actually say this guy's going to be the best. And they are. It's very, very rare when you get a number one pick being the best player, Hall of Fame bound. It's very difficult.
Yeah. So it's so many washouts. And it's funny that you mentioned Ryan Leaf, because I was shocked to see him on Good Morning Football the other day. I guess he's part of like the crew or something. He's like a regular now or something like that, which is such a great decision, I think, to put him on, you know, because it's almost like the flip side of the game, the world of football, of like a guy who, you know, he was hailed as like the greatest thing ever. And, you know, and then it didn't work out for him. And I thought that was such like that's a sign of like a gutsy, whoever runs Good Morning Football, that's sort of like a smart, gutsy, counterintuitive thing to do.
Because
I was using the term like big, stupid companies,
right?
You know, a big, stupid company would be like, Ryan Leaf, why would we have him on our show? You know,
did it have to be that voice? Is that how they would say it?
That's usually how they talk. Big, stupid companies. The guy's like, Ryan Leaf, didn't he fail? Wasn't he like a washout? You know, and
it just shows you he may not have been able to do it on the field, but his football acumen is above average, and an intelligent individual who can talk football, probably would have made a pretty good coach, is able to do it behind the camera or in front of the camera. So that's not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a different take, and, you know, and like I was saying before, I think for guys to succeed in football and for teams to succeed, a lot of things had to align, you know, like even like the Giants, getting back to the Giants, you know, ending up in the Super Bowls against the Patriots, the Giants just matched up really well against the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they faced the Packers, and they used to have an easy time with the Packers. And that was one of those things, like, I thought if the Giants had to play anyone else other than the Packers in those situations, they would have lost and they would not have made it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, Giant fans may hate to hear that, but, you know, I have no doubt about that. They just
you got to beat the teams you face. And it is all situational. Again, you mentioned Geno Smith. He was all but out of football, and he just found the right situation in Seattle, the right receivers, the right coaching, the right line, and it turned him into an MVP caliber player, at least for last year. We'll see how it does this year.
Well, it's funny, and you bring up one of my favorite topics in football, which is, and you know, Good Morning Football should make this a regular feature, is profiles of guys who were on their couch. That's my favorite story in the world, is where like if you remember Chase Blackburn on the Giants, he was like my favorite linebacker of all time at the Giants, I think. And so he was teaching math in Ohio. And like, I think he got a call at work, and you know, they're like, Chase, there's a call for you. It's the New York Giants, and they need you. And so, you know, he throws on, they were like, are you still in shape? I think he throws on his pads, and, you know, he comes back to the Giants, and then he ends up in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And makes great plays. So I love the stories of the guys who were out of football,
mm-hmm.
and they got the call, you know,
like Kurt Warner.
The Kurt Warner story is just so ridiculous. and I don't know if you saw that movie. I watched
it was a terrible movie, but I'm more talk. He was out of football. He was what was he working at a he was packing grocery bags.
It was God, that movie was awful.
A terrible movie.
You know, that movie was so bad. And I had thought of scenes even before they made that movie that I assume happened. Because, you know, he's like a stock boy, you know, at the supermarket. And they're like, so, Kurt, what do you want to do? You know, and it's, you know, it's like, well, I'm going to get into football and be a football star. And you just know someone was kind of like, that's great, Chief. I tell you what, why don't you go long on this case of peas and get them back up onto that shelf? Or tell you what, champ, you know how you could be a hero? Why don't you get this load of peaches and get them stocked on the shelf, okay? Mm-hmm. You know that'll be a touchdown,
right?
If you could do that. So, but it's such a ridiculous story, and I know even like screenwriters have said, like, and I know William Goldman said this. He said, like, I don't like to do sports because the story ends up being so ridiculous, mm-hmm. that it's like beyond belief.
Right. Well, you know, they have to make it somewhat interesting for the non-sports fans and for those who remember the story. Yes, it didn't go exactly that way, but they had to make it they had to Hollywood it up, as they say, even though Dennis Quaid played a pretty good Dick Vermeil.
Yes. Yes, he was good. And so some of those stories, it's just ridiculous. Anyone who was like out of football and, you know, and you know, like we were saying, that so many things have to align, and even it is show business. I mean, it really seems like show business. Like, you know, I was watching that night that you know, Bledsoe, you know, goes jogging to the sideline, and the guy in the Jets, Victor, whatever his name is, you know, he was still in bounds, so he blasts him. he goes flying on his ass. And in comes this guy I never heard of, you know, and it's kind of like that is so close to show business of, like, you know, the star got hurt and the understudy has to come in, gets her big break and becomes, you know, Barbra Streisand.
The rest is history. The Wally Pipp and Lou Gehrig scenario.
Yes.
Yeah, I get you. Well, all right. So let's stay with these Hollywood situations. And I'm going to jump into some predictions. So there have been experts and show listeners who have sent these in. I'm going to give you three predictions, and you're going to tell me if you think any of them could happen this upcoming year. All right. First one, Giants finish the season with three, four, five amount of wins. Brian Daboll and Joe Schoen are fired.
I would say no chance.
No chance. Okay. Is that just because they're going to win more than that, or those guys are beloved and are not being fired this year?
They're going to win more than that. I would bet, like, and let me put it this way. Let me use this as the clarifier. I would bet my 401k.
Wow.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, that's not bad. And I know the kind of 401k you're talking about. All right. So that's a good one. And I appreciate that. How about this one? And this one, I think, aligns with your beliefs. Daniel Jones continues to move forward in his abilities. Giants win 11 games.
That's what I predict. That's what I predict. And he's better weapons around him, better players around him. I think what I have is not cockeyed optimism. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, regular-eyed optimism.
I gotcha. All right. And now this plays back to the receivers that we were talking about. Not a single receiver on the Giants has over 500 yards for the entire year. So not a single individual receiver is going to top 500 yards. And
I wouldn't bet my 401k against that. I would bet like an amount of money equal to like the value of one of my cars.
Okay. So you think that there is at least one receiver on his team that's going to take the jump to light speed and really make a play this year?
I think so.
Okay. Interesting. I was torn on that one. There's just no name that really stands out, but I'm hoping that the draft pick or one of the free agent acquisitions or somebody does it. All right. Are you a fantasy football guy?
A what?
Fantasy football?
I'm actually not.
Okay.
I did it like 2 years. I couldn't really keep up with it. I was just kind of too busy.
No worries. It's just categorical. So if you had to pick one player on your team to form your fantasy league for points build your team around, what player on the Giants would, no, fantasy wise, not favorites, so this guy's got to put up points. What player on the team would you pick as your fantasy player from the Giants?
If I'm limited to the Giants, I'd probably be going with Jones.
Okay. So that's something, he did have, 2,300 yards passing, so not too shabby.
And he runs, when he's got an open lane. He's a great runner. So I could see him, I remember, I think when I did do fantasy, I guess, quarterbacks that ran in for touchdowns. Mm-hmm. That scored a lot of points in the fantasy
system. So. Yeah, the Michael Vicks of the world were quite popular before they decided to see what dogs can do in the fighting ring. So, yes.
The Vicks story, I'll just spend a second on that. So the sideline story, Tim, is just terrible, just unbelievable. But his running ability, his ability to run, I can't think of anyone who impressed me more in the ability to run. His ability to run was, tell me someone who was better.
I don't. I consider him one of the best running quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, if not number one. There were great ones. There were good ones, but no, he was one of the best I ever saw.
Unreal. And then it made me forget they showed some of his passing. And his passing was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, I had just remembered him for his ridiculous running. And then they showed a lot of his passing. And I was like, oh, my God, that's right. He was amazing at that, too.
He could have been something. He was a quality on-the-field guy. Unfortunately, the off-the-field stuff took him down. All right, so I want to know, give me a nice, easy list of your, I think you mentioned, you have it, your top five favorite Giants of all time.
Top five favorite Giants of all time. Let me see. I won't say LT just because it's cliche.
Well, if he's one of your favorites, you can go with it. You got five.
I'll tell you, this would be favorites based upon various traits.
Okay.
Not just performance. Mm-hmm. Just And this also too is even just like exciting to watch, aligned with my age, like I was at some of the games and stuff like that. I loved Jason Sehorn.
Nice. Good one.
And I told my wife, I explained to her how there was a game against like the Rams, and I think Mike Martz was the coach, and he had bad mouth Sehorn. said he wasn't that good and all this stuff like that. So they're playing the Rams. Seahorn picks it off, goes flying down the sideline for a pick six. And as he runs right by Mike Martz and he waves at him, he like twinkles his fingers, and I think it winked.
Wow. There and you go. That's, like, that's pretty good.
That was great. So Seahorn is one.
All right.
I just found him so it was so exciting to watch him. I thought Carl, and I love listening to him as an announcer. I love Carl Banks.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carl Banks was one of those guys who, and this is another one of the big philosophical questions of football that I love posing, is there are guys that are so much better than people realize. And I think, and Carl Banks was not ignored or overlooked. He was hailed as a good player. He's a very good player, but I always thought, like, his era, those guys were so good, like him and Harry Carson and stuff. So I love Seahorn, Carl Banks, you know, it's a strange pick, but it's partially because I really have a soft spot for guys who are underappreciated. I loved Chase Blackburn.
Okay.
I thought he was like the most underrated, underappreciated linebacker in my lifetime.
Wow.
And I won't put, I don't know if I'd, well, it's my list. I can put anyone I want on there.
Yes, you can.
The other guy who was the most underrated, underappreciated player I've ever seen in my lifetime on any team was Wayne Gallman.
Wow.
He was, I thought, the most underappreciated, underrated player in like the history of the NFL.
Running back, right?
Yeah, he's wow. Running back. He's great. He's fantastic. And then for a fifth guy, probably Sims, probably yeah. Phil Sims.
There you go. Well, you can't go wrong with Sims as on that list.
And the thing about Sims too that people may not remember is that that guy got the worst pass protection I've ever seen in my life. I mean, like, there were so many plays where he was just like dead. Like, you know, they almost had to like revive him. And he would sit up and say, you know, did he catch it? You know, that guy got his ass handed to him.
There you go.
And no one remembers that. They just remember like the successful pass, but got his ass handed to him, and he seemed so smart. Like they always talk about, and you saw it, him and Parcells would fight so much because they both had really strong opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is another one of the philosophical questions of football, of when like the quarterback, when a player and the coach are screaming at each other, you know, who's right? And you don't know. But no, the one thing that I got to respect is that the player's out there. He's out there. He has a view and a perception of the situation that the spectator on the sideline does not. So, you know.
Of course. But the coach is the one who designed the plays, and the coach is the one, in all honesty, whose career is on the line every game. And they're not going to fire the quarterback most of the time. They're going to fire the coach. So he's putting everything out onto that field. He's not going to hold anything back. Well, the player, of course, has to make moment-to-moment adjustments. But it really depends, situation to situation.
I'm a big fan of, I see parallels in a lot of things in life, and I'm reminded of sometimes when I'll be trying to do something around my house, and my wife is watching. I'm up on the ladder and she's watching. and she has a view of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a view of what's happening. And like, sometimes she's right, sometimes I'm right. Sometimes she sees something that I don't. Sometimes I know things that she doesn't. And just to give you an example, and it's much like, you know, what we're talking about with football, there were times where like, maybe I'm screwing in, you know, a thing for the curtains, a curtain rod. And she'll be like, well, it's not exactly straight. And I'm like, yeah, because where I wanted to screw it in, there's something there that a screw will not go into, you know? So like, that's what it reminds me of, is the spectator sees things that the participant doesn't, and vice versa. And so when I would see those guys arguing, and anytime a coach is arguing, it's kind of like, I hear you, coach, but you're not the one that's out there.
Right, right.
So, but like I said, that's another one of those like philosophical questions about football that I love, you know. And instead of just all the pundits on TV who are always talking about like the minutiae of the game. And I'd love to see more people in the football media address the bigger question, talk about the bigger questions of like we said, is the scouting bad, or is it really hard to do?
Right.
You know, coach and player arguing, like, who's right?
Well, you know? in the correlation you made, I've only been married for nine, almost 10 years. I think the wife's right. So I think in that situation, Matt, I gotta side with the wife.
And like I said, the situation that I pulled up, which actually happened to me, I was kind of like, you know, I said, well, if you know, the amount that it's out of whack, is that something you can live with, or is it really bad? You know, is it unacceptable? And so let's just say it's unacceptable. That's too crooked for me. And I said, okay, well, I got to go get the drill then and drill into this thing and put in an anchor or whatever, you know, like we need to do something different. Or like, well, I'm going to hang it as is, you know, that sort of thing. But like I said, that's one of the philosophical questions of life, is the spectator perspective versus the participant spectator. But like I said, those are, I love the big philosophical questions of football, and also even evaluating players. Like I said, guys that are better than people realize, and then other guys that may have their image is actually better than they really are,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there is circumstance. Sometimes they're in the right place at the right time. They got a little lucky, things aligned, you know, mm-hmm. but another thing, and you know, I know we probably both got to jump. You know, like I said, I love the philosophical questions of football, the bigger picture, if you will.
I like it, and I'm definitely, it's definitely one of those situations where you pose so many great philosophical concepts that on a future episode we'll have to delve deeper into those. So, but you're right, we already are getting to a closing point. So we're gonna slow it down, and we're gonna close it out and say that, you know, the predictions here, you know, bookmakers, getting back to the Giants, of course, are expecting the Giants to be a little worse in 2023. These are the experts. The team is an over-under about 7.5 compared to the 9 wins they had last year. You've got them 11-6. Ryan, former host, 10-7. And me sitting at 5-12. So what do you think? You think we're fair? What is that? Is that what we're going with? About 8, somewhere between 8 and 11 for you?
That's, you know, in any predictions, I always think you need a clarifier. You need clarifiers of like, how much would you be willing to risk on this? And even like, you know, this I go through this with our boss at work too, where like, you know, he'll say like, you know, and I'm just throwing these numbers, you know, to listeners should not assume these are real numbers, but the boss might say, like, you know, are you going to sell 2 million this year? And I'll say, definitely. Are you going to sell 2.5? Don't know. You know, and then it's like, are you going to sell 2.2? Really good chance I will. You know, so some of those things, like I just don't see them only winning five. I really don't. I see worst case scenario for them at something like eight. I know the schedule is tougher, but right now I think they have a lot of players who are significantly better.
Okay.
I think they're coming together.
All right. Well, there you go. I like your enthusiasm. And like I've said in past episodes, I may not agree with it because I am unbiased, even though I have, I know many people who are fans. So I appreciate it. Matt, thank you again for coming on the show. And as I said, since so many members in my family and friend circles are Giants fans, I am wishing you and them a very enjoyable and successful season. Proving me wrong would be perfect.
And, fantastic.
There you go.
And it was great being on with you. Anytime you want me on again in the future, it was a blast.
There you go. Well, we'll talk Battle of Saratoga another time then.
I always see parallels, you know, and I always see parallels with sports, war, my wife, there's always parallels.
All right, there you go. I like it. So thank you all for listening to Talking with People, a QF production hosted by Adam Pallant. I do have a special announcement that Talking with People will no longer be a QF production, but instead will be its own show, and details will be coming out soon. So, Matt, I think I mentioned this to you prior to the show. This makes you the final guest before the transition. How does that make you feel?
I'm glad that I could be part of your legacy.
There you go. I like that. I appreciate that. There's no one else I would have liked to close the curtain to. Everyone, please make sure to keep an eye out on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. You all know the social media deal. You'll be alerted to future episodes, and you can hit the follow button where you find your podcast. And while you're at it, if you're enjoying the show, leave a review. Why not, Matt, right? Leave a review.
Perfect.
There you go. Hey, if you want to get on the show, or even if you just want to chat with me, you can reach me directly through the X, Twitter, of course, at LoneDog71. Now, here is some closing music by Jason Licht. Yes, he's my stepson. He's a freshman at the College of New Jersey. Take it away, Jay.